Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Dr. Kathleen Corley. She has served as an elementary school principal and an academic improviser who has also received an Elementary School Principal of the Year in Beaufort County Schools in August of 2021. She has been a teacher, assistant principal, district administrator, but the best job on earth is the one she's held for over 30 years, which is that of elementary school principal. She likes to support teachers on behalf of the students' excellence, innovation, and for their to have fun, both at work and for the students to have fun. She's renowned for her unique communication and leadership skills. She holds a bachelor's in music education, a master's in music administration, and a doctorate in educational administration. Welcome to the podcast, Kathleen.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, it was within the first year of my starting a school in South Carolina. It's Bluffton Elementary in Bluffton, South Carolina, part of Beaufort County. And in those days, school communities could decide if they wanted to be year-round or stay as a traditional school. So some schools were not year-round. There was a vote that was taken, and the initiative passed. So we were to become a year-round school. That was great. I had gone to all the childcare providers in advance of this change, this potential change, because it changes how childcare is going to be handled for the summer, because the summer won't be as long. So then it turns into who's going to be with the children during intercession times. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks off, two more times a year. Okay, fine. And there was a childcare provider that is known nationally that assists in providing very low-cost childcare for students who need it. That person who was the director of that program agreed. Great. So the initiative passes, and it's the first school improvement council meeting after it has passed. Mm-hmm. It's at 6 o'clock in the evening, and everyone is walking in, and there are more people there than usual. I'm kind of surprised at that. And I'm seeing people there who I don't usually see. It's not the PTO president and the very, very, very involved people, generally speaking. These folks who were walking in, and everyone was carrying a piece of paper in their hand, looked like they were storming the embassy, politely, mm-hmm. quietly so far. So I asked one of them, could I see what you're holding? Does that have anything to do with why you're here? Mm-hmm. Yes. We got this piece of paper from the director of that childcare place to say, she was not authorized to give that go-ahead for handling intercession daycare. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be happening. Therefore, what are you going to do with our kids? Well, it wasn't just the parents who were there. It was also two television crews and one print reporter ready to see what was going to happen. I'm pretty sure it was a slow news day because this doesn't seem like it would be anything earth-shaking, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. you never know in a small town. So I had no advance warning, so I kind of needed to make up a program on the spot. I could either say, gee, I'm sorry that happened. I don't know what to do, and I'll get back to you. But it seemed like they weren't going to be happy unless they had an answer that was satisfactory. And the satisfactory mm-hmm. answer would be, we can have a childcare program that is available to our children for those weeks that we're off, that the other schools will not be off, for about the same kind of cost as we would pay the folks who said they were going to do it, but as it turns out, they couldn't. Mm-hmm. So I made up the thing on the spot. And as I was doing it, I kind of thought, you know, that's about 65 children. I wonder if I can handle personally 65 children, yeah, because I didn't know how we were going to pay for it. Before we left that night, I think we all learned something. I was able to say, well, by the way, the TV crews shut off their lights and looked at their watches. Porter just smiled and wrote up the rest of the meeting in a yeah, very nice way. But what we learned, what answer that you think is going to be right, that you know you can deliver, mm-hmm, somehow. And I explained to the parents that if they're ever in such a situation, again, please call me, let me know what's going on. At least give me the chance to do it right or mess it up. Mm-hmm. But I do need to know about it to make it work.
Yeah. And it's great to hear that that worked out. Like, you were totally unprepared for what they were going to come with and making that up on the spot. And as you told me in the pre-chat, it did work out. The kids did get childcare and, you know, everything, you know, worked fine. And, you know, you talk a lot about it, your experiences. You have a book coming out, as of recording, it's going to be out in a few weeks. The Magical Place We Call School, Creating a Safe Space for Learning and Happiness in a Challenging World. So talk to me a little bit about the book writing process, about what people can learn in the book. You said you wanted to highlight chapter 10 in the book as well.
Yes. I probably always believed I was going to write a book someday, but was kind of afraid of the process, mm-hmm, afraid to get started. I have lots and lots and lots of stories about things that have happened in schools. And I've also been the beneficiary of watching some absolutely fabulous teachers teach. Mm-hmm. You know, once you move out of the classroom and get into administration, you get to be sort of a peeping Tom, mm-hmm, on all kinds of wonderful things that happen in classrooms. Yes, there are things that have to be managed and coordinated and coached up. But there's also just, wow, that was a fabulous lesson. I cannot believe you pulled that off. That was fantastic. Far better than that little thing with the families and the daycare, mm-hmm, because the real magic happens in classrooms. It's important to know about the book that it was my intention to make sure that people know that no matter what goes on in the world, no matter what pressures we have to do one thing or another, or to not do one thing or another in our schools, that we have the ability and the duty to, mm-hmm, make schools the safest, most interesting, fascinating, glorious places for students that we can possibly manage. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm kind of a stickler about not having interruptions to the school day so the teachers can teach. If there's a construction cone of any type, whether, mm-hmm, it's, not having enough materials, having a building that's not cooperating with you, needing supplies, needing a parent to have an attitude adjustment, perhaps, mm-hmm, whatever it is, I believe that that's my job, to make sure that teachers can do what they need to do, because there's, mm-hmm, nothing special that goes on in my office. All of the good stuff happens in the classroom, and we need to make that as seamless and as inviting for teachers to teach and students to learn as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Your chapter 10 in your book, you talked about it being angels in the classroom, and that teachers are not getting enough credit, you know, for what they do in the classroom. And how can principals and other people who are working in administration really support teachers more?
I believe teachers want as big a playground as they can possibly have.
Yeah.
Want as much latitude, want as much voice in what it is that's being taught, and especially how it's being taught. Yes, there are the standards.
Yeah.
There's standards and there are guidelines and there's state regulations and there are county regulations and there what your school decides needs mm-hmm. to happen. Somehow, amongst all of that, please give the teachers the largest area they can have to be creative, to be excited about mm-hmm. things. The best teachers are the ones, it seems, beyond knowing their students and knowing their curriculum and having a love of communicating it. There's a pad next to their pillow at night, mm-hmm. or there's a phone nearby, because they wake up and they think of something that would be awesome to teach the next day. And they don't want to miss the opportunity to do that because they're all about uncovering things for students. Look what I just found, boys mm-hmm. and girls. Look what we can do with this. I wonder where this came from. What do you wonder about what we just found? And that's where the magic happens, because teachers are inspired to do what they do, especially when they work with other teachers who are like-minded. Mm-hmm. And if they're all committed to the goal of being the best they can be and helping the students be the best they can be, mm-hmm. some wonderful things happen. Like I said, regardless of whatever else is going on. Mm-hmm. During COVID, teachers did amazing things. And it was so incredibly difficult. And talk about out of the trenches, everything mm-hmm. kept changing day after day, sometimes hour after hour. We'd get a new set of regulations about wearing masks, not wearing masks, how long we were teaching, synchronous, asynchronous. Mm-hmm. Our t-shirt that year said on the back of it, pivot, just pivot. Whatever helps next, whatever happens next, just pivot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of teachers today are, they're having challenges with parents, especially when you talk about the younger grades, when we have students who are displaying signs of neurodiversity, and sometimes parents don't understand, you know, the child might have ADHD or other learning challenges. So how can teachers better approach parents, you know, if they wanted to get the IEP process started?
That's a whole separate podcast, as I think you probably know.
Yes.
Oh, elementary school is interesting insofar as four-year-olds and five-year-olds, if we're going to start at the beginning, four-year-olds and five-year-olds look a whole lot like toddlers yeah. in a way. And they're just very, very young in their parents' eyes. Mm-hmm. So when we start to talk about Thomas is not displaying the same characteristics as some of the other students or the majority of the other students, mm-hmm. That he shies away from loud sounds. He seems to be sensitive to certain textures. He maybe it appears to be moody. Appears to have trouble communicating. I'm not laying all of these on at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that it could be any of those. It could be a collection of those. When we start to talk about there being differences, mm-hmm. it's very difficult for some parents to hear, because the natural reaction is, why are you telling me there's something wrong with my child? Mm-hmm. Do you not know how to teach all children? Well, yes, we do. But what we're talking about is possibly for Thomas, there are more challenges than you know there are, mm-hmm. or that we know there are. And it's possible that we need to dig a little bit deeper to figure out what those challenges are and how best to meet those challenges. Mm-hmm. I was talking with a parent yesterday, and her son has autism, and there are times when he is very emotional and has trouble communicating his needs, especially when something is overwhelming him. And yesterday, we're recording this at Christmas time. Yesterday was our last day of school, and we had a sing in the gym slash cafeteria. Opened the doors, and all 639 students and 100 staff sang Christmas songs. This is not an ideal place for this friend to be. And when I came in, he was standing with a PE teacher with her arms around him. He wasn't doing anything. He just looked very unhappy. He's a first grader. She had her arms around him, and I looked at him, and then I looked at her, and I motioned headphones, because usually he has headphones in a circumstance like that. And she said, no, he said he didn't want them. And I said, are you sure? Looking at him now. And he said, no, I don't. And I said, hey, here's the thing.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Pretty soon, we're going to have some really loud sounds, but they're going to be awesome because they're going to be pretty. Right now, we have some ugly sounds. I mean, nobody was screaming. We just wouldn't allow that, but they were making noise like you'd make noise, like waiting for an assembly to happen. And 639 children make a fair amount of noise. So I said, here's the deal. The ugly noise is going to happen for about 2.5 minutes. And he had a watch, and I knew he had a watch, and I knew he would time it because I said about 2.5 minutes. And it was a distraction. So he looked at his watch, and it was about 2 minutes, 20 seconds. And I do have some control over when the assembly starts, so I could make that happen. And he looked up at me, and he gave me thumbs up. And so he sang some of the songs. And then when it came to Jingle Bell Rock, when the dance teacher motioned for everybody to rise and dance, he did the same and enjoyed it without headphones. So it was a good day. I saw his mom at the end of the day when she picked him up from childcare. And I told him I was going to talk to his mom a little bit, and he made that pouty face. I said, I don't have anything negative to share, so it's going to be all good. So we just kind of looked, and mom got almost emotional when I said, here was the thing, and this is how he chose to handle it. And I think we're getting better at hearing him and understanding what he needs. And he's getting better at letting us know what he needs. I sometimes think of neurodiverse children in some settings, much like babies. Babies cry because they don't have the words. Basically, they're trying to communicate something to us, and our radio dial is not tuned into their station, and theirs not to ours yet. That's the great thing about it, yet. So when it seems like a child like that is just frustrated almost continually, it's because we're not connecting somehow. So we need to find paths to make the connections. And explaining that to parents, if we ask questions about, so how does it work at home? How does he do non-preferred tasks? I love to have the non-preferred tasks conversation. Because in today's world, some parents will say, why, what do you mean by non-preferred? Well, I mean, like, you know, like, oh, a chore or something. Chore? Like what? Well, you're taking the trash out. And I'm thinking, I need to aim lower. Put your plate on the counter and you're finished? Something like that? He doesn't do those things. Oh, I see. Let me make a note of that, because we have a whole other challenge here, because we're going to ask him to do things.
Yeah. And I figure since you've been an administrator for so many years, there's also that change in parenting style that you've really experienced from when you started working as a principal. And, you know, I have that tough love type of parenting myself. Because I was an educator before I became a parent, but, you know, I know that there is that, you know, there are a lot of parents who you know, like you gave that example for, they, it's about, you know, helping them through challenges at school, although they might not be faced with challenges at home, a lot of the time. So yeah, I think that was a great story to share about that particular student. Another topic that is sometimes controversial at the elementary school level is suspensions. So what is your policy on suspensions?
There is a matrix, a behavior matrix that we follow through the county. It gets updated probably every 3 years or so. I've served on that committee a couple of times. It's stratified by grade level, primary, upper elementary, middle school, and high school.
Okay.
Obviously, things that happen in different places should be treated in different ways. And it is also stratified by how many times this thing has happened. I don't know, cursing, for example, let's say a fourth grader, the first time it has a prescription for what it is we are to do. And it does give latitude, which is great. There are some things that don't give us much latitude, and a suspension will happen. That would be for a fight. Now, definition of a fight. It's different in different places. And I don't think that's weaselly. I don't think that's inconsistent. But I think you have to give a little way on that. I remember in the beginnings of being at one of the schools, and someone called in on the radio and said, there's a fight on the playground. And it was two boys arguing with each other. Well, no, that's not a fight. That's an argument, because we came a-running because it was a fight. And the person, the adult sounded agitated. So if a child pushes another child and the other child pushes back, and we're done, that's nothing. I mean, yes, we're going to discuss it. Yes, there'll be a consequence for it, because there was likely something else that happened just before that. There were words that happened just before that. That would not be a suspension. If there's a push or a punch, and there's a push or a punch, and there's another round of that, yes. Because, you know, when you see it in the movies, or when you see usually males doing this, the push cannot go unresponded to, it would appear. Now, if they're going to stand there and stare at each other for a while after that, that's self-control. And it would appear then that neither of them wants to engage in a fight. And then we'll be able to discuss it. Thank you, gentlemen, for not carrying that onward. Well, I pushed him because he pushed me first. I understand that. Don't condone it, but I understand it. So to answer your question, that the suspensions are few and far between. And we had our first actual fight 2 days ago. And it was on the bus. And it was a first grader and a second grader, and here's the punchline, they're brothers.
Yeah, no, I've had that happen. Yeah, so that's more of that parent handling, and it also is that fine line when you get some reports from the bus as well, or from the bus stop. When I've dealt with school discipline, it was, you know, reports from neighbors of something that happened at the bus stop. So that jurisdiction piece as well. So
yes. And these boys said, what I hate it when they do this. We were play fighting.
Yeah.
And we say, yes, there's no such thing as play fighting at school. I get it with brothers.
Yeah.
But don't tell me, let me guess, one of you took it too far. Yeah, he did. And they both pointed to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing here, that's the problem, because we cannot play fight. Mm-hmm. It's sort of an adaptation of, this is why we can't have nice things. That's mm-hmm. why you can't mm-hmm. play fight.
So you present sometimes on climate and culture at conferences. How do you weave that into talking to other administrators about teacher support? Because if teachers feel like they're being well supported, the climate and the culture will thrive in a school.
You may or may not know that there are climate and culture surveys and indicators, and some of those find their way to adjudicating our schools. We yeah. have two that we take each year. One is connected to the state report card, and the other one is the Upbeat survey, and okay. that we take twice a year.
Okay.
And it surveys all kinds of things, teacher voice, mm-hmm. teachers' belief that they have a voice, appreciation, work-life balance, care and concern, commitment on the part of administrators, mm-hmm. Trust of administrators. It has about 30 questions or so. We score very well on mm-hmm. that on that survey, as well as the one for the state. And there's according to the person who works with us, the Upbeat communicator with me, there's an anomaly with ours, because work-life balance mm-hmm. is our lowest indicator.
Yeah.
It's about 64%. And then there's the question that gets at, do you want to be here? 99%.
Oh, wow.
So basically they're saying, God, this is difficult. Mm-hmm. This is a lot of work, and I'm not sure I'm doing right by my family.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, this is where they want to be. And I mm-hmm. can't ask for anything more than that. And I do not ask for people to take things home with them. I don't ask for them to come in early. I don't ask for them to stay late. Do they do that? Absolutely. And if you ask them, they'd say, well, I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place, because
yeah.
I want to do my absolute best, but there aren't enough hours in a day, and I have my children too.
Mm-hmm.
When we finish, especially when we finish parent-teacher conferences or some sort of group thing where folks are visiting as a group, when I close out the evening, like, oh, look at the time. It's 10 minutes after 7. Now all the mommies and daddies in the building need to get home to their children, those folks who are teaching here, to remind, I don't say it in such a fruity, almost sarcastic way as I
uh-huh,
just did.
Uh-huh.
But they get the notion that it's important for there to be some kind of balance. And I know there are plenty of times when it feels vastly out of balance. Just before break feels out of balance. There are yeah. nighttime performances. It does for the administrators as well, because we're there at pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. It's not like a high school where the athletic director is responsible for athletic events and the arts people are responsible for arts events. And the principal and the APs may not be there at any of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But for elementary, you really need to be there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's a good indicator of, like, just saying, like, throughout the year, you do have a lot of those performing arts events or other parent events. And, you know, you don't have as many people to divide in the admin staff among.
Right.
So, yeah, really noticing that work-life balance is important for your staff is really what a great administrator should have. We've had a great conversation around your experience, your upcoming book, and some of the work that you've done with year-round schooling, as you mentioned in your trench story. Out of everything we've talked about on the podcast today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I would love for them to remember that they are their children's first teachers,
mm-hmm.
and we are the support team that comes in after them.
Yeah.
Use us as resources. Listen to what we have to say. Try to understand that we see your child through different eyes, sometimes quite often.
Yeah.
And any teacher who has been at it for any length of time and is committed to the craft is there only to get the best from every student so that they can be anything they want to be.
That's so important to remember. Where can people find you online and connect with you?
They can find me at on Facebook at Kathy Corley, and on LinkedIn at Kathy Corley, Threads at Corley.Kathy, because that's the way they work, and Instagram the same way.
Okay, great, great. I will put those in the show notes. Thank you so much for being my guest on the Out of the Trenches podcast today.
Thanks for inviting me. It was a great time.
My book, Out of the Trenches, Stories of Resilient Educators, has now been published. You can access it through Amazon. You can buy it at the Road to Awesome website, or you can get it through my website at danagoodyear.com. Please leave a review, and you can also access it on Kindle.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.